Estes versus Palmore.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel for the government, may it please the court. My name is Sam Ansel on behalf of the appellant Alonso Palmero. At issue here is whether the court erred in denying the application of Section 5C1.2 of the sentencing guidelines, also known as the safety valve, for the reasons stated by the court. First, the timeliness of the proffer, and second, the fact that the defendant lied initially at the onset of the proffer. If the court finds that to be error, the question then becomes whether that error was harmless, and if harmless, the question becomes whether the sentence is reasonable. An analysis of this, I believe, requires some discussion of the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984 and the remedial decision of Booker. Congress's overarching goal in passing the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984 was to diminish sentencing disparity. The Supreme Court, when it decided Booker, recognized this fact and sought to preserve the intent as best it could in fashioning a remedial opinion to allow the statute to operate without violating the Sixth Amendment. Because Booker removed or diminished the central vehicle of that purpose, a system of mandatory guidelines, it's the appellant's position that due deference to congressional intent requires strict adherence to the procedural requirements of the act. The court in Booker sought to have the least impact possible on that overarching goal of reducing sentencing disparity. To that end, it left most of the statute intact and sought to make the guidelines advisory in a meaningful way. The procedural requirements of the act become even more important post-Booker to prevent further erosion of congressional intent. True adherence to congressional purpose requires actual, not nominal, adherence to the methodology prescribed by the act. In particular, Section 3553A4 requires a sentencing judge to consider the applicable category of offense committed by the applicable category of defendant as set forth in the guidelines. A5 requires the court to consider any applicable policy statements issued by the Sentencing Commission. And even within the context of a mandatory system of guidelines, Congress reemphasized its overarching goal in Section 3553A6 by requiring a sentencing judge to specifically consider the need to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities among defendants with similar records found guilty of similar conduct. Your Honors, in this case, the court found that the defendant did not qualify for the safety valve, not based on any factual findings. In fact, the facts weren't actually in dispute. The government and the defense agreed that the defendant had submitted a proffer, that at the onset of the proffer he had lied about his source of supply. The AUSA called him on that lie, explained to him the purpose of why we were there, and in order for this to be productive, that he needed to tell the truth. After that discussion, the defendant answered the government's questions to their apparent satisfaction. That doesn't seem to be in dispute. In fact, at sentencing, Mr. Glickman stated that there really wasn't anything factual in dispute, and instead focused, and the court also focused, on whether as a matter of law, the timeliness of the proffer and the fact that he lied at the onset, regardless of whether he gave a complete and truthful statement afterwards, whether those two facts disqualified him for the safety valve. And the judge went on to say that even if he were wrong about the application of the safety valve in the abstract, that he would not give him the benefit of the safety valve. And that is what I believe takes us to the issue of harmless error, Your Honors. And I would suggest that in order to comply with the procedural requirements of the Sentencing Reform Act, of the sentencing statute, that the judge must correctly calculate the guidelines and explain how he or she travels from that guideline range to the ultimate sentence. And it's the defense's position, the appellant's position, that this explanation should include either factors that are not adequately taken into account by the guidelines themselves, or why specifically the guideline in that case is not appropriate, as was the issue in Kimbrough. And I believe that is what is required to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities and to provide for meaningful appellate review. In this instance, Your Honors, the judge focused specifically on factors that were already taken into account by the sentencing guidelines. He spoke of the severity of the offense, the fact that he had distributed large quantities of methamphetamine. He was held responsible for 6.63 kilograms, but that's something that's already specifically taken into account by the guidelines in the drug quantities table. In fact, the base offense level for which he was held responsible corresponds to a range of 5 to 15 kilos. So that he should get a two-level increase just based on the quantity, I believe, requires further explanation from the court. And I would ask this court to find that there was procedural error, that it was not, in fact, harmless, and that even if it were harmless, perhaps the court would also find that the that the sentence was not reasonable, and I would suggest that the court look to its ruling in Abbas, where the court states in U.S. v. Abbas, decided by this court, that variance from the guidelines should be explained and supported with compelling justifications for such deviations. And the court cites U.S. v. Gordon and U.S. v. Wachowiak. And in particular, to the question of whether the sentence was reasonable, the court asked whether the district court's explanation was sufficient to justify an upward departure from the correct guideline range. And where the court merely repeats a factor that's already taken into account by the guidelines, I would suggest that is not sufficient. As to the fact that the court stated that regardless of the correct guideline calculation, it would impose the same sentence, I believe this is a further erosion of Congress's intent in the sentencing statute. And what's distinguishable in U.S. v. Abbas, where the court did focus on that fact, that the district court had said that it would impose the same sentence, that court also stated numerous reasons why it would depart from the guideline range, reasons that were not actually taken into account by the guidelines, that being that the defendant in that case had assumed the guise of law enforcement, impaired the reputation of law enforcement, made a false report to the FBI, which diverted resources from the pursuit of actual terrorists, and that the defendant had a history of fraud and lack of remorse. And those are reasons.
You're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Judge. Those are reasons that were not adequately taken into consideration by the guideline at issue, Section 2D1.1.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Barry Glickman. I'm an assistant United States attorney from Indianapolis, Indiana. In this case, the issues are quite straightforward and quite simple, I would respectfully submit to the Court. This is a case in which the defense would ask this Court to find that Judge Hamilton committed clear error by denying the defendant the safety valve after he admittedly lied about his source of supply for methamphetamine during a safety valve proffer. This Court has stated repeatedly that a district court can and should consider a defendant's lack of candor in determining whether a defendant is eligible for the safety valve. In this case, the defendant did not make a good faith attempt to cooperate with the government. He clearly didn't volunteer all the relevant evidence he had concerning the offense. And because of that, he did not meet his burden of proving that he was eligible for the safety valve.
Counsel, just for my information, how does this proffer system work on the safety valve? Is it a written proffer?
No, sir. What happened was I got a phone call from Mr. Ansell indicating that he wanted to bring his defendant in for a safe valve proffer. We set that up. The defendant's brought in. It was in a room with Mr. Ansell, an interpreter, a number of my case agents, myself, and that's the way the proffer occurred and typically occurs in our district. At this proffer, Your Honor, the first question that I asked the defendant, knowing the answer, was, who is your source of supply for methamphetamine? And for whatever reason, the defendant chose to lie. And that was the basis of Judge Hamilton's ruling in this case. I do feel compelled to point out that Judge Hamilton was well aware that although the defendant's proffer was late, that was still permitted by the guidelines, as 5C1.2 enables a defendant to give a proffer up until the time of sentencing. And he acknowledged as much on page 7 of the sentencing transcript, where he indicated that he was aware that the defendant could give a late proffer, but in this case his concern was that the defendant's proffer was late, it was reluctant, and the overriding concern was that it was false. And on those grounds and what Judge Hamilton heard in the record before him, the defendant did not meet his burden that he was eligible for the safety valve, and Judge Hamilton was absolutely correct in denying him the benefits of that provision. Now we move on to the second issue, which was the sentence that was imposed in this case. Because the sentence in this case was within the correctly calculated guideline, it is presumptively reasonable. Judge Hamilton imposed a sentence of 180 months. The advisory guidelines in this case were a base offense level of 34, criminal history category of 1. The guidelines were 151 to 188 months. The 180-month sentence was squarely within that advisory guideline range. It is presumptively reasonable, and Palmero, in his brief, did not and does not today offer a reason as to why it was not reasonable. The interesting thing in this case, though, is even if this court finds that Judge Hamilton did commit clear error in not giving the defendant the benefits of the safety valve, if the defendant did get the safety valve in this case, his base offense level would be a base offense level 32. And a base offense level of 32 with a criminal history category of 1 results in an advisory guideline range of 121 to 151 months, still above the 120-month mandatory minimum which existed in this case. Even assuming that did happen, Judge Hamilton, as was pointed out, indicated that even if he was wrong and if the safety valve should apply in this case, he would have given the defendant a sentence of 180 months. And he went through the salient 3553A factors. He noted the severity of the nature and circumstances of the offense. Judge Hamilton noted that the sentence was being imposed to deter the defendant from committing further crimes and to protect the public. This was an individual, as Judge Hamilton noted, who distributed a large amount of methamphetamine, which he characterized correctly, I might add, as the most dangerous and addictive drug that there is today, that this defendant was responsible for distributing 6 kilograms of methamphetamine in a relatively short period of time, a 6-month period of time. This is a defendant who profited greatly from his crime, as the court ordered the forfeiture of 3 high-end automobiles, including a Mustang, a Hummer, and another automobile. There was a large amount of U.S. currency that was seized at the defendant's residence, as well as big screen TVs and other items. In fact, Judge Hamilton remarked at the sentencing, as he doesn't remember or couldn't remember, that someone who was in the drug game for this period of time had profited as much as this defendant did. But if the court does find that there was error, it was harmless. The variance in this case, if error is found, is 29 months off the top end of the guideline. Judge Hamilton stated his reasons and certainly imposed a reasonable sentence when viewed through the prism of the 3553A factors. I appreciate the court's time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ansell, how much time? 1.5 minutes, Mr. Ansell.
Thank you, Judge, with respect to the government's assertion that clear error is the applicable standard here, I disagree. I believe that as a procedural matter, the standard is error. Did he err in finding as a matter of law, not as a finding of fact, but as a matter of law, that where the defendant lies at the onset of his proffer, regardless of what he says after the fact, does that disqualify him? And where the defendant waits as long as he waited before submitting a proffer to the government, does that also disqualify him? The government's description of the proffer session as not being honest, I believe, is somewhat misleading, because the government did admit that after the initial lie, when he was called upon it, he came back, he gave a further statement, and on page 10 of the transcript, the government concedes, "I will tell the court I have nothing to disprove what the defendant said afterwards." Well, what the defendant said afterwards lasted more than an hour and only ended
But it isn't kind of important if he tells who his source is?
Yes, Judge, I agree. And his source, as it turned out, was his cousin, who had already been indicted, and his initial emotional reaction, was to protect his cousin. The government called him on it. He said, "I realize I have to tell the truth," and he just let go. He said everything he knew, which does comply with the requirements of 5C1.2. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansel. Mr. Hansel, you took this case by appointment, did you? Well, you have the appreciation of the court for your fine work representing your client. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.